thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Right back to it, Ed and Mansfield on the Bees. Hi, Ed.
Hey, from Rochville. How are you?
Good. What do you got?
Hey, and nothing that's been said, but we got the worst officiating in the league. And where's the situation room? And how many Canadian teams are in the playoffs? That's a problem for the Bruins. The Bruins have to beat the Maple Leafs, and they have to beat the officials.
Who are the refs tonight?
I don't know, but two out of three of them are from Canada.
And is that right? Okay, my guess is that.
Start with this crap.
Most of the refs are from Canada, except for some guy named Rooney, who's from South Boston.
Yeah.
Who, whenever I think it's Rooney, whenever he officiates the Bruins, porks them.
Sticks it to him
because he wants to prove to everyone that he's not just reffing for the hometown team. I think I have this right, half right as usual, partially right, which means half of it's wrong, but something like this. There's a guy from Southie that refs in the league that the Bruins and their fans think comes in here and sticks it right across your ass every single time because he wants to prove to everyone that he's not a hometown ref.
Goes by the nickname Whitey.
So if it's that guy, then I'd worry. Other than that, I'm not worried about the situation. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, Felga, where's the situation room?
What's better for the league?
It's in Toronto.
Caller, if you're really worried about that, what's better for the league? Boston advancing or Toronto advancing where the NHL gets no U.S. TV ratings?
Oh, Boston, please.
What do you think Winnipeg going to the Stanley Cup Finals is good or bad for the National Hockey League?
Bad
for the league.
Oh, my God. Do you think they make or lose money with Winnipeg?
And they better watch out because I think that's in play.
Winnipeg, Winnipeg and Nashville on the same side. But, you know, Columbus, Winnipeg, like there could be some doozies.
What if it's Toronto, Winnipeg?
That kills the U.S. market, that kills the U.S. ratings, it just kills it.
I tell you, it'd be a pretty entertaining series, I bet. Though.
It would be. So I would not worry about that. Cam and Taunton, what are your Bruins thoughts?
There are three guys on this team who got something to prove to me. Rask, Nash, and Marchand. I mean, Marchand, I mean, you said it yourself, Mike, he scored one goal in his last however many playoff games. If you remember, 18. It was game one in Ottawa last year where he literally got the puck bounced right off the boards to him with a wide open net. So he literally did nothing on the play except tap it in the net. That, and obviously we all know that Nash has got a history of disappearing in the playoffs. And, you know, Rask, I mean, not only did he struggle in the playoffs last year, I don't know if you guys remember this, but on the game winning goal in overtime, he drifted to Chelsea halfway outside the net. His skate was barely touching the crease as that puck went in. Those three guys had the most approved to me this playoffs.
Do I remember that goal? I play the pitcher like every other week. And if Vinny has it, I'll play it again. Yeah, Rask did not get nearly enough blame for that final goal. He slid completely out of the crease. Completely. Left a completely wide open net. Nonsensical play by Tuukka Rask. Guys, there's something to prove. I think Marchand's a good one. 0-1-1-8 in his last six games in the regular season. One goal in his last 18 playoff games. And as Cam pointed out, that was hardly a Guy Lafleur kind of play. It was really just tapping into an open net. So Marchand's one of these guys who, even though he was so brilliant as a rookie in 11 when you won, is someone that I worry about. The game speeding up, sticks his, you know, squeezes his stick too tight, like one of those guys who gets too amped up for these games.
So our buddy at Boston Sports Inf on Twitter sent us a stat that said, Marchand, if you just keep it in this building, zero goals in his last 16 playoff games in the Garden. Zero goals. He hasn't scored in a home playoff game in 16 games. Like, it is tough. I mean, he's not a third, fourth liner anymore here. Like, you know, this isn't, he's not an extra forward. They're relying on him to put the puck in the net. Like, time to produce.
The Rick Nash thing is interesting. He's, you know, sort of been a disappointment wherever he's gone in terms of Stanley Cup stuff. Except he's not the man here, right? Like, he's not, you know, wherever he was, Columbus, sure. You know, he's like the franchise. And with the Rangers, maybe not the franchise, but, you know, supposed to be one of the top producers. Here, he's really just supposed to fill a role, isn't he? So maybe that gets more out of him. There's less expectation here for them.
I told you, I think that line is going to be key. You know, and because he's going to be with Krejci and DeBrusk. And typically, as Krejci has gone in the postseason, when Krejci has a good postseason, the Bruins play well.
Andrew in New Bedford on Aaron Boone and the Yankees. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, in what crazy world does Aaron Boone live in which case there's a questionable slide, Joe Kelly hits him and overreacts, but then the guy who gets hit stomps his feet on the ground, slams his bat, and charges the mound. I mean, I get sticking up for your players, but, I mean, call a spade a spade. the Red Sox didn't overreact any more than the Yankees reacted by charging the mound. It's like, come on, man.
Well, I just hate the way Tyler Austin charged the mound, which was the slamming of the bat. I think he was just begging for Vasquez to grab him. Begging. And Vasquez did it, so he had to go.
Probably. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I thought the slamming of the bat was just good theater. It was like, you mother... God! You know, there was such rage behind it. I was like, oh, yes, here we go.
I still think he knew it was coming, please. You're telling me you got caught off guard. The previous at bat, he thought he was going to get hit. And then in this one, they missed him the first time, and, oh, you know, baseball rules dictate it's over. Stop it with that. You knew it was coming. You knew there was another chance. Like, the idea that he was somehow surprised by it, to me, is a joke.
Joe in the car on the Bees. Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys, how you doing? One of my main concerns about this series is how is Mark going to react to the younger, faster guys around him? Because just by looking at it, the eye test, there have been some games this year where, God forbid, the puck gets stuck in his skates. You know, some guy will blow right by him, and he's just completely lost. So I just wanted to find out what level of concern you guys have on that, and I'll listen.
High level concern. Bad matchup for Char.
Very high.
A lot of speed out there.
I just think it's a bad matchup for the Bruins' D-Cor. I do. I just think that it's going to be wave after wave after wave. And you know what? I think Cassidy knows it. This is why he's opted for more defensive-minded forwards, and even if it's just the one with Wingles over Donato, he knows he's going to need the help back there because his defense is going to be under siege.
So, Ed, why don't I ask the both of you, considering how this team looked down the stretch, is this almost a must-win tonight for them?
No. It's not a must-win.
How about a play well?
I mean, no, it's not. It's just not. I mean, there's a long way to go in the series, and it's not going to dictate much. So
I'd like to see them come out with some jump, though. I'll tell you that.
So, look, that's a good one. In that, did you watch any of the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia thing last night?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh came out, shot out of a cannon, and Philadelphia wasn't really ready to match. And you sort of wonder, like, Hextall, that's a coach there, not Ron Hextall, another... What did you tell the guys before the game? Like, this isn't the regular. You got to be ready to go because the game changes. It's a million miles an hour. It's twice as fast as a regular season game. Pittsburgh was shot out of a cannon because that's what happens in the playoffs, and it was like Philly wasn't ready. So that's what I would just, you know, not that Bruce Cassidy needs to be told this, but.
Well, considering how ugly some of these first periods have been
better
over the last
be ready.
Couple weeks,
right.
Yeah, it's got to look, it better look crisp.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you.
I mean, to me, they got to show some jump here early because the way the season ended the last 2 weeks, what did they have, one good game in the last 2 weeks?
It's true. Mike in Dorchester. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you got?
I'm just wondering about Donato tonight. Me and my buddy Nick been watching it all day. I just can't – I'm baffled. Why is he not starting tonight with the boys?
It's conservative.
All this kid, he's hungry.
They're getting conservative, Mike. It's a conservative move. They're more worried about the goals against than the goals for. I mean, that's really it. And that's why you play Tommy Wingles over Ryan Donato. And Wingles fits better as a third or fourth line guy. I get that. I would agree with that, that Wingles is more of a fourth line player than Donato. And again, I'll say mostly it's because Wingles sucks. And that's basically so he's got to grind and crash and he can kill some penalties, so he's more of a fourth line guy. So I get why they're doing it. I know why they're doing it. It feels like a little conservative, a team and a coach that all season long is not coached afraid. And not set a lineup that was afraid. You know, if the kid can play, the kid can play. And it's about scoring goals as much as preventing goals, and that's how he's done it the entire year. And now you get into the playoffs, and you sort of pull a move where you're really more worried about the goal against than the goal for. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm not ripping it. I'm telling you, it's a little out of character for what they've done all season long. We'll see. I'll second guess if it doesn't work, of course. And I'll just tell you, I mean, what I would do, I think DeBrus can play on the third and fourth lines. I'd play Donato with Krejci and move DeBrus down, and therefore there is no Tommy Wingles in your lineup.
Boy, Krejci, Donato, and Nash, that feels like a good group.
Offense, that's an offensive line. This series is about speed and offense and scoring and up and down the ice. And so match it. Match it. Right now, Toronto has better forwards than you.
So I just looked up Chara's numbers, too, against Toronto this season because I was curious. Again, it feels like a horrible matchup. The last 2 years, Toronto's won 7 of the last 8. Over the last 2 years, the Bruins won one game. It was 4-1, late this season. I think that game was in February. The numbers aren't as bad as I thought. He's a -2 in 8 games. But you are talking about one of the great plus player defensemen in the league over the last, 15, 20 years?
So that's probably a low number. I mean,
I think,
comparatively speaking.
Yeah, he's had four minus games in there and, you know, two others that are even. So, you know, I don't think it's a great matchup for Chara.
We continue with your thoughts. Bruins, Leafs, last night, the fight at Fenway Park. What were they saying in New York? How did New York cover that story last night? What did the New York broadcast sound like?
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I like anti-coupon-coupon.
And Mass.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now here's the 2-1. And it hit him. Austin slammed his bat on the ground. Now heads toward the mound.
I don't blame him.
And he's ready to swing. He and Kelly go down on the ground. Both benches empty. We have a brawl in Boston. And the brawl is going on. Austin had slid hard into Holt. And so Kelly hit him with a pitch. And Austin charged the mound.
Look, there's payback and there's payback. You don't hit a batter there throwing 98 miles an hour. You just don't do that. That's his life. Never mind his career. That's his life. Are you kidding me?
It stings. He'll be fine, Susan. He didn't plunk him in the head.
Are you sure she meant his livelihood and not his life?
Either or. She sounds like an idiot. Or she's like lost it. Maybe she needs to see a neurologist. I don't know. It feels like there's something off with Susan Waltman.
I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I thought Kelly hit him basically pretty much where he should.
Right.
Hit him in the back, hit him in the ass, hit him in the leg, whatever. Just don't hit him in the head.
So that's what the Yankees radio call sounded like. Maz, you liked the yes call, the TV call?
I did. There were parts of it I liked.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead, Jimmy. Play that.
It's Tyler Austin. And there it is. And Austin does not like it. Now he's going to head toward the mound. Now this is a brawl. Austin's right in the middle of it. Yeah, I mean, Aaron Judge is moving the pile. He's almost stuffing the pile back into the Red Sox dugout. And Judge and Stanton pushed it almost back to the Red Sox dugout. This whole melee is happening in front of the dugout now. And Aaron Judge was leading the charge. He was pushing back about 10 guys at once. Look at him. They're stuffed into their own dugout.
Don't come out.
Okay, so I could do without Paul O'Neill at the end. But when you see the visual of it, it is true. Like, really, the whole thing started in the middle of the field. And then by the time you see the video...
He says, all because Judge is just pushing the whole...
Yes, yes. It's like having Vince Wilfork in there pushing the pocket, for crying out loud.
Well, CeCe Sabathia was doing the same thing. The both of them were like John Riggins. It would have been awesome if you had, like, the old train horn. Someone should do that and put it to the video.
I mean, by the time you see the end of it, it's true. The Red Sox are almost, like, all backed into their own dugout. They're all over there. Meanwhile, you've got the 6'8 Patances pushing, the 6'7 500-pound Sabathia pushing. You know, Judge... Stanton, like, they're just leaning on him, pushing him all the way.
Like riot police.
I mean, if I was a Red Sox, seriously, pick another team to fight. You don't actually want to get into a brawl with these guys. I'm happy with what I've seen from the Red Sox here in the early part of the year, but if it's like a full-fledged brawl, let's face it, the Yankees are going to kick the crap out of them.
Most teams. They'll kick the crap out of most teams with those two, with Stanton for sure. All right, back to your phones. Colin in Boston, your thoughts on Joe Kelly.
Oh, my God. So I loved him just, like, you know, not in my kitchen, brother, like, wait for him to, like, charge, you know, and just took him down. But did you hear his interview afterwards of the excuse that he gave?
You mean Joe Kelly or Tyler Austin?
Yeah, Joe Kelly. Did you hear what he said the reason was?
Oh, the ball got away from him?
He goes, I'm no Greg Maddux. I throw a walk in innings. So what do you want from me?
So it's basically him saying, guys, I suck. Like, you're right. I can't hit him.
So I didn't see that comment, but it makes me like him even more. At least the reality is that he knows what he is. Like, you know, the whole, I was trying to go up an inline. Oh, my God. Why do they even say it anymore? Why do pitchers even say it? Stop with that.
Mike and Wilbert, thoughts on tonight? What do you got?
Screw the playoff game. Can we get more Phil Nevin talk? Because I really need to hear what that mustachioed blowfish has to say about last night. Like that guy hasn't been relevant since he was a juice box in the 90s. And we're talking about what Phil Nevin, the guy, I'm surprised he's still not complaining about the old stadium he played in freaking San Diego, where he was wasting all his money at the Pharmacia over the border in TJ. He used to complain to Kevin Towers about the freaking dimensions of the ballpark. So he's probably a little testy right now. And please, no more Susan Waldman, all right? The Edith Bunker of baseball, I can do without it. We got a Bruins playoff game tonight. I want to hear about this team getting pucks in deep on freaking the corpse of Ron Hainsey and pounding him all night and getting shots on whoever they start in goal, because there's a little bit of a goalie controversy going on there.
Yes, Mac.
The backup, they got played down the stretch.
Chris McElhinney?
Because Curtis McElhinney, a little bit shaky. Played well his last two games, but going into the playoffs, he was shaky. And the Leafs give up shots. You want to look at something that the Leafs' biggest deficiency? Defense. Morgan Rielly, I want the Bergeron line on him all night, because that guy is a turnover machine. Yes, he'll score, but defense, not his strongest suit.
All right, so let me ask you, if it's about exploiting the Toronto D and getting shots on their goaltenders, how do you feel about Donato being out of the lineup?
I'd rather have Donato center. I'd rather have Backes centering Donato and Heinen, because I feel like you have home, you have the last change, you can spot them in the offensive zone when you need to, and I think you have the better D. So if you're really concerned about that line's defensive responsibility, then put Char and McAvoy in back of them to sort of shore up that need. And they're not slow. Like Heinen and Donato,
Backes is slow. Mike Backes is slow.
But let's not play make believe that he's slower than what we were talking about the line yesterday, which was Gianta centering them. So I mean, for me, I'd rather get a guy like Donato who can pounce on the turnover, which Toronto's D will have, and put it in the back of the net immediately.
Agreed. So at least you agree with me on that. Backes, they don't like him at center because he's too slow.
I mean, you could tell that based on the way they configured those lines in practice the other day and the way it went during the year.
So listen.
They don't want him in the middle.
Listen, they have Achari in the middle because of the speed. But on faceoffs, Backes takes the draws because Backes is a better face, or they trust Backes more. At least on one side, he's going to take the draws. So it's like they're really sort of shoehorning it because they don't want Donato in there, or they're afraid of Backes at center. And to me, again, the solution would be to move DeBrusk down to the third or fourth line and play Donato with Krejci and Rick Nash.
Yeah, listen, again, I'm not telling you they're doing the right thing. The thing that strikes me about this is it feels like it's Cassidy stepping out of his sort of comfort zone a little bit.
Or his what he's done all year.
He's erred on the aggressive side with some of these young players, and now all of a sudden he's backing off and wants to play a little bit more conservatively. And I'm not saying it's a huge shift, but it's a notable one.
So quickly, we had a caller before who was worried about the refs and all this. Just so you know, you have the biggest homer ref in the league reffing the game tonight, which is good for you. Kyle Riemann, and this is, Jim Louth is down here, and he gave us his Scouting the Refs website. It's for the gamblers. They scout this stuff. So scoutingtherefs.com. Records home winning percentage for refs. And this Kyle Riemann has the highest home winning percentage of the, 49 refs or something like that, Jim? There's like 49 refs. Of the 49 guys, Kyle Riemann has a 70 or 700, if you will, win percentage for the home team.
I mean, that's off the charts.
When this guy refs, home teams win at a 70% clip. The other guy, Dan O'Halloran, who you've heard of, has a 56% winning percentage for the home team. He's the 19th ranked homer ref. So you have two homer refs, including the number one homer ref in the National Hockey League. So I would not complain about the refs.
So the NHL wants the Bruins tonight.
I don't know. I'm just telling you. I mean, that's what the gamblers would say. Mike in Brighton on last night's fights. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So I just want to say I'm not really a big baseball fan. I don't watch baseball at all. But I watched the Red Sox game last night because of that pounding they did the night before. And I have to say, that fight might be the best thing that happened to baseball this season. If they're fighting for ticket sales, they're fighting for TV ratings, they need more stuff like this. You got Aaron Musselman or Austin Buffman Tyler charging on Gumby on the mound. It's amazing. It's great baseball. It makes for an exciting event, and I think it needs to happen more.
Agreed. Give me more.
I mean, the only thing that thing was missing last night was Stanton taking his shirt off.
So I just settled down. So I just hope the league doesn't suspend these guys too much. Like, let them go. Let them go. Let them leave the bench. Let this stuff happen. Let it go.
I mean, this stuff with the Yankees now, this is three I don't want to call them all incidents, but three like little flare-ups at the very least in the last, what, you know, three, four series they've played, going back to Sabathia getting pissed off because Nunez bunted on him, the whole the Apple Watch spying thing in the dugouts, and now this, like, this is great.
Adrian in Milford. Hi, Adrian.
Hey, guys. I'm going to have to disagree with that last call. I've been watching baseball for a long time, and I honestly think that bench brawls should not be allowed.
Oh,
I think they should take it out of the game. There's too many possibilities of injuries to your key players, and what, for a bench brawl that's exciting to watch? I just don't agree with it.
Okay, so let me tell you why they allow the bench brawls. I said it before. I believe this is the answer, and that is in every other sport, they don't allow you to come off the bench or the bench in the NBA or the NHL or any other sport. In football, you can't leave the bench. But that's because in hockey and basketball and football, there's an equal number of players on each team on the field, 11 and 11 for football or 5 and 5 for basketball or 6 and 6 for hockey. So you don't need to send extra guys out there. In baseball, there's one batter against nine fielders. So one against nine, that's a mismatch. And then you can say, well, a third man in gets thrown out of the game. But at that point, the third man's in and the one guy's getting pummeled. So it's a tough one. I'm glad it has that math problem because I want them to be able to continue to leave the bench and fight because I enjoy it. And they are there for my enjoyment. Now, we're not saving the world here. And we're not protecting the children, Murray. We're here to provide entertainment and enjoyment for the likes of us.
And that game was over 4 hours last night. Did anyone bitch about it?
Yes, I did. My only problem with the fight, my only problem with the fight was that it took half an hour for them to figure it out.
Yeah.
And like I said before, just throw out the hitter and the pitcher and leave the rest for the league to look at on video. You don't try and pick apart who was where in the fight and who hit who and who really got dirty at the bottom of the pile. Save that crap for the league office when they see the video. Just would you get everybody back into the dugout and let's throw the next pitch and let's get on with it. That took like a half hour to figure out. That was dumb.
I don't know if it's really one versus nine when you have Phil Nevin in the third game. George C. Patton himself down there with his helmet. I just think that guy is such a hardo. I just can't get past it. Walking around like he's Douglas MacArthur out there for crying out loud. Shut up and get back. Get back in the third base coach's box. You tool. Good God. Like, seriously, in that whole thing, I gotta focus now on the third base coach running in with his helmet.
Naz finds that funny, doesn't it? Are you sure? You good?
I don't know what's wrong with me.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it. 98.5,
the Sports Hub. Well, we're in it to win it. I don't think there's any secret in that. That's what I think all 16 teams would tell you that. But we're focused on game one in Toronto and getting through the first period. We feel we're a Stanley Cup contender. That's why we're here. But we've got to get through game one before we worry about anything else. And that's, you know, kind of the been the predominant message.
Hey, so what I think people might be overlooking, I know it's not football, coaching isn't everything, but I mean, the Maple Leafs got a pretty good coach on the other side in Babcock, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup, and he's been to a couple others. I mean, I think that could be a factor in this whole thing. I mean, changing on the fly. I know Cassidy seems like he's hitting all the right buttons this year, but the playoffs are a different story, and this guy's done it in the playoffs.
I mentioned it earlier. I think it's the checkmark Toronto because this isn't about like managing a team over 82 games or taking a team in a certain direction, which I think Cassidy's done a great job of, right? You know, he's modernized the entire thing. He's gotten them younger and faster and playing a different way and the buy-in, and he's been terrific, no question. Now you're in a seven-game series where it's about matching lines and adjusting game to game, and now it's like a whole different kettle of fish. And, I mean, we'll see how Cassidy is at it. I don't know how he is at it. But Babcock is considered one of the best. You know, he's like, I mentioned, like, coaching royalty. I think he's the highest-paid coach in the game. I think, you know, to get him to Toronto, they gave him something like $8 or $10 million a year, something crazy. And, you know, he has coached a Stanley Cup champion. He's coached two other teams to the finals. He's coached a couple gold medal. You know, the highest profile coaches in the game. And he really loves to match. You know, you throw out a scoring line, he'll throw out a checking line. And so when you get to Toronto, he has the last change, which allows him to do that. Here he has to do it on the fly. How much does he do? Does Bruce Cassidy try and do the same thing? And if he does Cassidy have, you know, the acumen to match Witch with Babcock. I think it's a big part of the series.
I mean, this series really is a good test for Cassidy. You know, as much as he coached in the playoffs last year, not with this team and not with a team that was expected to do anything, right? You know, he's pushed the right buttons all year long. So this is, it's a good test for him, too. Maybe we get a read on him in a big spot.
To me, you know, the most interesting thing is, you know, both coaches, do they just go first line versus first line? Or, like, when the Bergeron line goes out for Boston, does Babcock try and throw out that fourth line with Thomas Plekanec, you know, who's a good defensive player all those years in Montreal, but Plekanec usually gives Krejci fits. That's usually the matchup, Plekanec versus Krejci. Plekanec has a great success over the years neutralizing Krejci. But anyway, and then they have Leo Komarov, who is like their rat, their, you know, a real agitator and has had a real thing with Marchand. He's gotten under Marchand's skin in the past. To the point where I think Marchand kissed him once. You remember this on the ice? I think there was a thing, there was a kissing thing. Weird thing. But Komarov is like a nemesis of Marchand. So when the Bergeron line is out there, does Babcock throw out Plekanec and Komarov and try and get under the scoring line skin? Or do they match Auston Matthews against Patrice Bergeron? Same with Cassidy. Does he have Bergeron playing in like a defensive role? Because that's what Claude would do. If Claude were still here, he'd say Auston Matthews out there and throw out the Bergeron line to prevent the goal against. Cassidy hasn't done that. He's sort of put Bergeron in a lot more offensive situations. So would he keep Bergeron away from Auston Matthews to put him in a situation where he can be more free to go forward and score? Or are they worried about the goal against? Are they going to put Bergeron's line out there in a defensive? You know, like this is a cat and mouse thing that I find most interesting, how they're going to match up. And in the matchup game, Babcock's got more experience and probably more ability. So we'll see how that all plays out, but it's a factor.
Definitely. I mean, I want to see how Cassidy does that too, because he wasn't afraid to use that fourth line in some big spots. So, you know, I don't know. It's risky to do it in the postseason, though, isn't it?
Here's a couple thoughts on Christian Vasquez from last night. Tony in Boston, go first.
Hey, Mike, love the show, man. Mike, I agree with you, man. There needs to be more fighting, man, in baseball. I wanted to get your take on Vasquez letting Tyler Austin make his way to the mound without being dragged from behind, man. Veritek would have never let that happen, man. I wanted to get your guys' take on that.
Okay, first of all, let me grab Joe in Framingham. Same topic. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, I kind of had the same idea that this last caller had. I remember John Marzano, I believe it was saving Roger Clemens' butt back in the day. There's no way in hell Vasquez, knowing the history of these teams, should have allowed Kelly to throw his pitching hand at someone's head in a fight.
I think you can say that, but we'll let it go at that.
No, they're dead on. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Vasquez made a huge mistake there. I don't know what the hell he was thinking or what he was doing. Like, how could he not know that that was coming? Again, when you watch it, he stands up. He almost treats it like it's just a standard hit by pitch. Like, oh yeah, the guy's going to go to first base. I got to get ready for the next batter. And then all of a sudden, I think it starts to dawn on him, like, uh-oh, he's mad. And to me, that's a huge mistake. Like, the caller's right. You can't let your pitcher out there start throwing punches, and you can't get an arm hurt. It's hard enough to keep him healthy as it is. Big mistake.
We've got Brian in Providence on the B's. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I'd just like to say two quick things. First one is that I think Toronto's coach, Babcock's a really good coach, but he's always had tons of talent. He's never really done anything with a mediocre team, so I think there's a good chance Cassidy can hang in there with him as far as coaching goes. But on the Donato thing, I think one of the reasons he may be sitting tonight is because he's one of the few guys on the team who shows signs of being susceptible to intimidation. You know, he's had a few games where you kind of felt like, not that he was scared, but that,
he just stepped in the league and he's 20 years old or whatever he is, and he's slight, and so I guess he's prone to that. But you're shaking your head, Maz?
Because I don't think he's intimidated. I think you can just push him around.
I mean, he goes to the front of the net.
Absolutely. So to me, that's not intimidation. He's not afraid, I don't think. But he's, you know, he's light. You can move him. I mean, he's easy to push out of there. And so I think that's what it is. Not to mention the defensive aspect of the game. But to me, it's not. He doesn't strike me as a kid who's afraid. He sticks his nose in there.
Following up, Peter in Plymouth on Donato. Hi, Peter.
Hey, guys. So Cassidy has the right to bring Donato in game two if he wanted to, correct? It's not like baseball players.
Oh, of course.
Your lineup is set.
Of course.
So could this be just Cassidy, I don't want to say protecting, but maybe keeping Donato from getting shell-shocked? Because we can all agree that playoff hockey is twice as fast. Let him see it up close game one, and then just get him, unleash him in game two and let him do his thing.
Yeah, if that's...
slim chance, but just, I mean, he is a kid. He came in halfway through the season, so he hasn't seen what this can be.
All right, so let me try and justify the move. It's not for that. I mean, and if it is, that's overthinking it. That's just overthinking it. Were you trying to win the game or not? You know, put your best lineup there or not? So I dismiss that, protecting him. If you have to protect him, don't bring him to the big club. Put him down in Providence, or don't, you know, tell him to go back home and finish a semester at Harvard. So, no, I don't want to be protecting him. I would say this, that he is and can be, like Sagan in 2011, more of a game-changing kind of thing coming in off the bench. In other words, if they play Donato tonight and they needed to make a big adjustment for game two, would Tommy Wingles, like, change the dynamic or the DNA of anything?
No.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But throwing Tyler Seguin in there in 2011 or Donato sort of changes the DNA and the mix of the whole thing, and so maybe that's part of it. I just think they're trying to be defensive, and they want to keep DeProsk up with Krejci, and Donato does not fit as a third or fourth line guy, so it's Wingles over Donato because they're more worried about the goal against than the goal for. I think that's potentially a mistake.
They chose a more conservative path to start. I mean, that's the way they're going. But, you know, of course he can get in there. And he is, we saw it right away when he played, you know, and I know it was regular season, but for a guy that had never set foot in a pro game before, he's there's a little bit of game breaker in him.
Okay, we've been mostly Red Sox and Bruins, but Keith has been holding in Holden to talk Patriots. So go ahead, Keith.
Hey, guys. Listen, I keep hearing about Brady, and it goes back and forth with accountability between Brady and Belichick. No one is holding a crown.
Why would you hold that long and then not speak into your phone? I'm giving you one more chance. If it's a cord, put it in your mouth. If it's a phone, put it right up to your lips. Okay, Keith, go ahead.
All right, thank you. All right, yeah, I was just saying, Robert Kraft, he's the one still signing all these Patriot players, and they're all coming out against the coach. We took Tom Brady's defense last year.
It doesn't take long. It goes near the mouth. I just don't understand why Robert Kraft is paying all these players.
Yeah, guys, I was wondering, why does Kraft pay all these guys?
Oh, why do you do that? Text
so much
us.
More.
If that's what you're going to do, email us. Tweet us. If you want to speak into the phone. Why does Kraft keep signing all these players and they keep going against Bill? Good question, but, you know, it's just a... The deluge of Brady, Edelman, and Gronkowski with the passive-aggressive, thinly veiled tweets and Instagram posts. And, I mean, it's crazy, actually, that is happening in Foxborough, of all places.
Oh, my gosh, it's unbelievable. It's beyond comprehension. Like, what next? Devin McCourty pulling down his pants and Moon and Bill on Instagram? Is that coming next? Like, you know, kiss my butt, Bill? Like, what's... Seriously, these guys have been... It's almost surreal with them. Like, you have a hard time believing the Patriots would ever deteriorate into this sort of thing.
Brian in Rhode Island on the Bees. Hi, Brian.
How's it going, Belger? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I agree with you about Donato. And did you watch the Minnesota Wild game the other night when Greenway played? How many games has he played in the NHL and he was in there?
Yeah, and how did he look?
They lost 3-2 to a great Winnipeg team. I'm going to go on. I got another thing for you.
Go ahead.
Achari and Backes. You said Backes is too slow to play to the center. Well, Achari's not very fast either, so that I don't think that trade-off is very good.
Well, we'll see. I'm just telling you what they say, that they worry about Backes' speed up and down the ice.
Backes is glacial.
He's glacial. He is super slow. But just really quick on this Greenway, is it Dave Quinn, Dan Quinn? Who's the BU head coach?
All I know is Quinn. I don't know if it's Dave or Dan.
Quinny. Must be Dave Quinn. He must be a lousy coach. You see all these BU kids coming to the NHL, and it's like the team with McAvoy and Forsbacka, Carlson, and a couple of the guys who are in the league. They had four first-round picks. And then this Greenway kid just goes pro and is playing in the playoffs right now. Like, The BU kids that come out of there, it's just the talent. So he recruits, but he must not be able to coach a lick because they haven't won anything. I know one time they were close. The goalie threw it between his legs, and you know there was a gambling thing going on there. Who the hell knows what was really going on there? But good Lord, you see these guys, they come into the NHL, and it's like, whoa, we had him, and we had him, and we had him, and that guy too, and we haven't won anything.
Who's we?
BU, Boston University. So I'm wondering, like, can
we.
The guy can recruit John Calipari down there, but can he coach? Does he know what's going on? We don't win squat.
BU, we.
Boston University.
F you.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blood force trauma to run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, only one place to go.
Nobody.
It's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
I remind you to enjoy football, food, and more with Tom Brady at the Best Buddies Challenge. June 1st and 2nd. Register today at TeamTomBrady.com.
So Rob Gronkowski with a new Instagram post today. So who better to decipher it than a man who's more stone teenager than he is an actual grown-ass man? Yours truly. Black and white photo of Gronk looking lean and mean. And it reads as follows. You see the play. You see the fun. You see me go down hard. All capitalized. They've been saying for years I wouldn't last since their eyes first saw it all. Just because you can't do it don't mean I can't. It's all about putting that sweat and tears in before hitting that stage. I know I can get out of control, but I'm in control. Hashtag fans that make her dance. I read into this like I read into all of these.
Please do translate.
I see some shots at the coach, potentially.
Where?
Well,
you know what? So do I. That's
where
funny.
I don't. I didn't see a thing.
Go ahead, Murray.
So I'll start.
I want to see if yours is the same as mine.
I'll start again. You see the play. You see the fun. You see me go down hard, Coach. They've been saying for that. Bill's been saying for years, I wouldn't last since his eyes first saw it all. But Bill, just because you can't do it, you know, the pliability, the working out the way that I do now, just because you can't do it and you don't understand it, Bill, doesn't mean I can't. It's all about putting in that sweat and tears in before hitting that stage. I know I can get out of control, Coach, but I'm in control. So let me do what I want to do and let me work out the way that I want to work at. Hashtag, gimme that money. Bands of Maker dance. Peel it off. Peel it off. Make me dance. Make me dance and leave me alone, you Taskmaster a-hole.
It's just a little strong.
You got to put a little exclamation point at the end of it, Murray, right? A little punctuation.
I'm telling you, that's how those guys feel. That's why there's the Palace Q.
Felger and Maz.